on radio, on YouTube, streaming live on investtalk.com, and for our podcast subscribers. This is Invest Talk, independent thinking, shared success. Invest Talk is made possible by KPP Financial, a registered investment advisor firm serving clients throughout the United States. Here is KPP Financial Portfolio Manager, Luke Guerrero.
Good afternoon, fellow investors, and welcome back to Invest Talk. I'm Luke Guerrero, and it's Friday, May 16th, 2025. Now, as we've made it through the first half of the month of May and also the first half of the second quarter of 2025, nobody can accuse this year of being uneventful. And so as we learn more about policy, about trade, about sentiment, about all these macro data points that affect each and every company in which we invest, it's now more important than ever to stay focused. Because although this year has brought fresh challenges, fresh volatility, things we had not seen really, maybe over the past couple years, maybe ever, certainly more changes, more turbulence is on the horizon. And so we here at InvestTalk hope that we contribute at least a small part in your journey to becoming a better and more informed investor. Now, in order to do that, we bring to the table a mixture of educational items and actionable items, stories that we think are critical for you to hear and understand. But most importantly, we answer your finance and investment questions through our voicemails, through those questions that you leave over on the comment section of our Invest Talk YouTube channel, and of course, through your live calls throughout the show. And because the most important part of this show is answering your questions, before we run down today's market performance, before I bring up those topics that I have for you today, let's tackle this caller question now.
Wanted to get your thoughts on Dark Ninja, ticker symbol Sierra Nancy, SN. Wanted to see what you guys think about this ticker. If I wanted to start a relatively small position to capture some of that growth in the coming years. Thank you for the time, and we'll wait for the answer on the podcast. Have a good day. Bye.
So the question is about Shark Ninja, ticker SN. And Shark Ninja is a home appliance company, I guess you would say. I originally know them from decades ago when my parents bought this cordless vacuum, brought it home, small cordless vacuum into the house, and would use it all over the place. And so that was the Shark vacuum. Now, they eventually bought Ninja, think food processors, think blenders, and they have a whole host of products from corded and cordless vacuums to air fryers, multi-cookers, food preparation, even hair and skin care, beauty appliances. And so through that, they have rapidly expanded their footprint beyond just household cleaning products into various segments of your home. They had pretty strong Q1 performance. Looks like they had net sales of $1.22 billion, a 14.7% increase year over year. In the past year, they're up 39.45%. They started trading in the middle of 2023, so it's been trading for over a year now. Year-to-date, they're up 45. Over the past 3 months, down 745. So in their entire trading history, they're outperforming the S&P 500 and their industry as a whole. Now, growth has been pretty solid. They've grown about two times from December of 2020 to where they're projected to have in terms of revenue by the end of this year. And their margins are pretty solid, albeit volatile, right? From 11.9 in 2020, all the way down to 3.9 in 2023, back up to 7.9 last year, and projected to be around 11.4% this year. It's about a $14 billion company, too, with very little debt, only about $931 million of debt. But since they started trading, they have been issuing some shares, right up from 140 million shares, really 130 million, looks like, my apologies, 139 at the beginning of 2024, about 141 now, about 6.16% short interest out there, and their earnings have been pretty consistently upgraded. Now, For this name, they did recently report earnings at the beginning of May, and you see this flag here in FactSet if you're watching at home, which shows you the change in sentiment turned negative for the first time in 6 months. The reason why? A lot of their products are built overseas. And so although they've had this expansion, certainly they do have some macroeconomic headwinds that could hurt them going forward, as well as just some increased market competition. And so it's trading at about 19.1 times forward-looking earnings, about 7 times price to book, about 2.5 times sales. Overall, I think this is a solid company. It has had its growth slowed a little bit, but I do like the diversity of its business. So for this company that has had quite the run, right, it's pulled back a little bit over the past 3 months. Certainly, I would still wait a little bit. It looks like they're... Let me take a look at their chart here real quick before we move on. Yeah, it looks like it's consolidating a little bit, and it found some resistance. Now it's trying to find some new support. I think it's getting close to a time to enter, right? It's still trading above its five-year average on forward-looking price to earnings. But given how fluid changes are within trade with China, where a lot of their stuff is created, I would still hold off for now and keep it on my list. That is SharkNinja, ticker SN. Now, we've got a lot of ground to cover in the next 45 minutes or so. Here's some of what we have planned. My main focus point concerns this topic. The bond market's power grows as rising rates loom. The bond market continues to drive market sentiment, raising concerns about inflation expectations, risk premia, and potential headwinds for equities despite recent gains. Also, we'll touch on the record of European-denominated debt that has been issued by U.S. companies. Also talk about how we really feel recently, how investors should feel about U.S. assets given the historic run since Liberation Day. And should we have time at the end of the show, we'll touch on a potentially new trend, which I like a little bit, CEOs not giving short-term earnings guidance. We also have some voice bank questions ready to play, including a one on portfolio management more broadly, and another on Roblox Corp, ticker LRBLX. As well as some questions that came in from the comment section of the YouTube channel. And of course, I welcome your finance and investment questions now or any time throughout the show. Now, heading into a break, and on the other side, we'll look at today's market activity and answer more of your questions here on Invest Talk.
Serious investors are certain to have finance and investment questions.
Hello, Invest Talk. This is Jose from New York, and I'm looking into buying a small position in Dollar Tree or Dollar General.
And the best person to ask your question in the right way is you.
Hi, Invest Talk. I was calling in with a question on the stock Nike.
And 24/7, rain or shine, Justin Klein and Luke Guerrero stand ready to provide their unbiased answers.
Now, it is up into a little bit of resistance, so you probably want a little bit of consolidation here.
So this company does not capitalize itself with equity. It does not capitalize itself with debt.
Your participation makes InvestTalk better.
Let's play a caller question from 888-99 Shark.
This is James from Georgia. I was trying to call about ticker symbol SCCO.
So don't forget to call InvestTalk.
I appreciate the show, guys. Thank you.
888-99-CHART. The InvestTalk phone lines never close. And now Luke Guerrero is here. Call InvestTalk, 888-99-CHART.
Let's talk a little bit about the market today. U.S. stocks were positive across the board, nearing best levels on the day, major indices capping off a pretty solid week of gains and higher for 3 of the past 4 weeks. In fact, S&P 500 ended the week only 3% below its February record close. What dragged the market ahead this week and today? Big tech, mostly higher, Tesla and Google, the notable gainers on the day. Other outperformers included managed care, biotech, pharma, medtech, airlines, and building materials. Not a lot of underperformers, so we'll call it relative underperformers on the day, included energy, semis, and regional banks. Dollar index up 20 basis points on the day. Gold finished down 1.2%, actually the worst week since June of 2021. Crude oil settled up 1.3%. But overall, pretty quiet session, right? Not a lot of headlines on the day to drive the news, certainly during market hours. A little bit of a hangover still related to the positive news in the past couple weeks from the step down in U.S.-China trade tensions. I guess that's the last week. Trump said the U.S. will also set tariff rates for trading partners in the coming weeks, noting that there's just too many people to negotiate with. And also a lot of noise surrounding the Republican push for Trump's, quote, one big beautiful bill. The GOP failed on a key vote in the House Budget Committee today, meaning that, well, they'll have to scramble for another vote. Floor vote likely will be coming next week at the soonest. And the likelihood of it passing before Memorial Day starting to become less and less likely as it has to head back for another procedural vote. On the macro front, May preliminary Michigan consumer sentiment weaker than expected. Second lowest headline print since 1952, although it's important to note that did come before the de-escalation or slight de-escalation in tensions between the U.S. and China. Year ahead inflation expectations, 7.3%, the highest since November of 1981. 5 and 10 year expectations at 4.6%, the highest since January of 91. And from prices, April's import prices rose 10 basis points month over month. The export prices also rose 10 basis points month over month. More quickly, or at least in the same pace as March. And then after the close, we got news that Moody's would be downgrading the AAA credit rating of the United States, stating a decade of increasing deficits and no presence of any political will to do anything about it. So it'll be interesting to see how the market digests that over the weekend. Typically, when you see market reaction to news such as this, especially given that the rise in the U.S. deficit is not hidden, it's certainly in plain sight, market tends to not react too drastically. But still, any decrease in the U.S. credit rating, certainly not a good thing for long-term growth. Here's another YouTube question. As I think you know, we also post our podcasts in video form over there on our YouTube channel. And while you're over there, if you're watching and you want to hear my cat yell the entire time we do this show and I answer questions, while you're listening, if you got a question, just leave it in the comment section of the Invest Talk YouTube channel. This question came in earlier from Tyler Moriarty, and it's on ticker NRG. And it says, I bought NRG in 2023. When I did, it was around $35. Since the earnings was announced for Q1, it has skyrocketed. I've taken some profits, but I feel as though this price can't be maintained. What are your thoughts? Well, NRG, ticker NRG, is a integrated energy and home services company in North America, headquartered out of Houston, Texas. They had a pretty diverse portfolio. They got natural gas, coal, oil, nuclear, wind, and solar. They got about 7 million retail customers. They did report earnings on the 12th of May. So they reported earnings last week. Year-to-date, company's up 76.46%, up 47.96% on the three-month, up 91.97% in the past 52 weeks. Revenue growth exploding out of the pandemic and still pretty strong. Margins, although they lost money in 2023, margins grew to about 4 to 5% over the past couple years. Now, they're currently trading at the upper end of their five-year range in terms of forward-looking price to earnings. They announced a $12 billion acquisition to acquire 18 gas-fired power plants. And like I mentioned, their Q1 earnings, very, very robust. Revenues at $8.6 billion, net income at $750 million. Earnings per share came in at 3.61. The analyst expectation was 72 cents, came in at 361. So you have this huge, huge run-up. I think you're doing the right thing to start to take profits here. Free Utility doesn't have much debt, right? Only $10 billion of debt on a $30 billion market cap company. But either way, after a run-up like this, after a big run-up like this, it's up another 2.7% today. It makes sense to start to take profits here, because there is likely to be some downward pressure on the company moving forward. That is ticker NRG Energy. Congratulations. Big win year to date. Always a good time to take some profits. So we have a live call. Bill from Northern California has a question of VIOO and listening on AM 1220. Not sure if I can get to it before the break, but I'd love to hear your question right now, Bill.
Oh, okay. Well, so I have several ETFs. I put money in there before. When I got an inheritance, just to get some money in the market, I spread it out amongst, and three of the six that I have, including, you know, S&P 500 and all that. But three of them were small caps. I got the VBR, Vanguard Small Cap Value, and the VIOO, Vanguard Small Cap 600 ETF, those two in particular. And, you know, I've been, and they've been up and down. I wish I'd just withdrawn out. I don't need that diversity anymore, so I'd like to cash out. Do you think that's a good time to liquidate these two positions?
That is a great question, and we will look at VIOO and VBR after the break, Bill. Thanks for calling. Still more to come, including the answer to Bill's question, the answer to more of your questions, and my main focus point here on InvestTalk.
The weekend is here, or almost here, but you've got finance and investment questions, so step up and call in. InvestTalk, 888-99-CHART.
So before the break, Bill from Northern California was talking about his allocation to VIOO and VBR, both Vanguard small cap ETFs. Difference being, the VIOO is the Vanguard S&P 500 ETF, and VBR is the Vanguard Small Cap Value ETF. Now, if you're looking to get small cap exposure, generally, I am not the biggest fan of the S&P 600, and that's because if you look at it from a asset coverage basis, it tends to not be really that much small cap exposure. Only about 40% small caps, whereas mid caps is about 57.36%. And the reason being is, unlike the Russell 2000 index, which does a number of names approach, so it's the 2000 names after the 1000 largest names, it's a committee that selects what goes into that. And so because there's not really as good a systematic rule, it doesn't get as good coverage of the small cap asset class. The other one, the Vanguard Small Cap Value Fund, well, small value securities tend to do better in longer time horizons. But for Bill's purpose, if you're talking about more short, medium term, there are some things that could potentially weigh down on small cap stocks. Rising rates, we're going to talk about bond yields in a little bit. Rising inflation expectations. As rates get cut, that's when small caps tend to do better in these recovery phases. Short term, likely to be a lot of volatility. Doesn't mean you shouldn't invest in small caps, but if your time horizon is shorter, certainly a good time to start to divest from these two ETFs. Thanks for the call, Bill. Let's move on to my main focus point, which is, as I just teased, about the bond market. And it has always been and will continue to be a powerful actor, if you will, that grapples with a president and Congress's ambitions. My favorite quote that I've been saying about it is a Mike Tyson quote, I believe, that everybody has a plan before they get punched in the face. And that is the case here. Politicians have plans, and then the bond market starts to punch. And that's something we're still seeing. Treasury yields are continuing to rise. The 10-year broke above 4.5 at one point during the week. The 30-year neared 5%, despite cooler than expected CPI report on Tuesday. The reason why, and the reason why you saw some relief today as the congressional bill struggled, is the amount to which the one big beautiful bill would add to an already ballooning and exploding deficit. If you're a technical person, which I tend to not be a big technical person, 30-year yield chart is showing a bull flag. It could point to a move towards 5.5%. If PPI and CPI come in later in subsequent months, one of the reasons why it's not coming in hot as well, we're in 90-day pause of tariffs, right? There aren't really cost increases that are going on right now. Tariff revenue is pretty small, so you wouldn't expect that producers are seeing these price increases. They're certainly not going to pass them on to consumers lately. Walmart's saying that they will start to raise prices if tariffs are implemented. So if you see Congress trying to create a bill that adds $4, $5, $6 trillion over 10 years to the deficit, and then at the same time, inflation starts to peak up again, well, bond yields could start to go pretty crazy. We mentioned long-term inflation expectations rising, the highest it's been in decades for the 1 year, above 7%. And so this manifests itself with not just yields rising, but longer duration yields rising more quickly. We call the term premium. It's ticking higher, meaning in order to hold things for longer periods of time, investors are demanding higher levels of compensation than they have in really a very, 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 very long time. It's not just bonds, though. You're also seeing the options market, the VIX and VVIX, pricing in a lot more risk. High yield credit spreads are widening, meaning that bonds that are for companies, bonds that are for issuers that have lower ratings are starting to go up, meaning investors are demanding higher returns in order to hold on that credit risk, a sign of potentially distress within the broader economy. And so it's interesting, with all of this happening, to see this divergence from what the bond market is telling us and what equity markets are doing. Credit and volatility in equities are diverging. And so with the S&P closing higher, with the S&P reaching now 3% away from its February record, something's got to give. Now, as I mentioned, you saw some relief today as the bill started to struggle. Maybe concessions, given that the faction within Congress that is holding up the bill on the Republican side is wanting more spending cuts to pay an offset for these tax relief. Sorry, those are the words I'm looking for. But either way, the bond market has for 20 years told politicians, told lawmakers what it can and cannot do. And going forward, I don't see that being any different. Now, in the next Invest Talk, we'll look into this topic, why real estate and gold aren't always the best long-term investment. While many Americans favor real estate and gold as top long-term investments, financial advisors explain why stocks typically offer higher returns and greater diversification, and how to wisely include all of these things in a comprehensive, holistic portfolio. That's Monday, but for now, I'm Luke Guerrero, and I'm ready to take your calls, answer more of your voicemails, get to your YouTube questions, maybe even an iTunes review question, who knows? Either way, give me a call, 888-99-CHART.
Every investor is working to build a secure financial future. How they get there and when they get there, that depends on many factors. The more you learn about how the market works, the better your chances for success. So don't forget to call InvestTalk.
Recently, I had a somewhat unpleasant shopping experience. Not because the store was bad, but because the checkout system was very slow, and that was annoying. As I was waiting, I realized that I might have to run to the ATM to get cash, and that just made things worse. That was a frustrating experience. Then, about 2 weeks ago, I was at a restaurant that used Square. That transaction was quick and easy. The staff was able to focus on great service instead of fumbling with tech issues. So I decided to look into Square, and here's what I learned. Square's point-of-sale system is user-friendly and highly intuitive, plus Square provides the tools needed to manage behind-the-scenes work too. In fact, business owners can track sales, stay on top of inventory, and get a better understanding of their customers, all in the same place. The reporting features are especially helpful when trying to make sense of what's working and where to focus one's time. Square supports all major credit cards and payment methods, including contactless options like Apple Pay and Google Pay. So checkout is fast and easy. If you happen to be a business owner, Square makes it simple to set up an online store in just a few minutes. So Square is perfect for those wanting to expand beyond brick and mortar. Square is designed for businesses at every stage, whether they are just getting started or looking to grow. It delivers the tools to do both. Square keeps up, so you don't have to slow down. Get everything you need to run and grow your business without any long-term commitments. And why wait? Right now, you can get up to $200 off Square hardware at square.com/go/invest. That's SQUARE.com/GO/invest. Run your business smarter with Square. Get started today.
888-99-CHART.
Have you guys take a look at the stock RBLX? RBLX, that's Roblox. I was trying to get my 9-year-old daughter into how the stock market works. So I asked her what stock she wanted to invest in, and she gave me, Roblox, which is a game that she likes to play. So over the past month or two, it's really gained about 30-35% over the last year. It's gained over 100%. Just wondering if you could take a look into that and kind of see what's going on. And starting to get a little bit of FOMO here as my 9-year-old daughter's stock portfolio is vastly outperforming mine. So I'm wondering if you could give me any tips on if maybe this is a good one to buy for real. Thank you.
Sorry, that's hilarious. But congratulations to her imaginary portfolio. Maybe set a little money aside, let her do some investing for you. But taking a look at Roblox, Roblox is a global online platform for creating and interacting within 3D gaming. It's a $54 billion market cap company that doesn't have much debt, only about $1.8 billion. And the reason why is they issue a lot of shares. Up from $550 million to nearly $700 million since 2021. So they're financing pretty heavily with equity. Now, the reason why they've been doing well year to date is on the back of their Q1 2025 performance. They reported 29% year-over-year revenue growth, 31% rise in bookings, daily active users grew by 26%, and hours engaged by 30%, as well as announcing branded e-commerce partnerships, opening up a store. And so you see that revenue from the pandemic has grown about fivefold, but it's still not close to making any money here. Net income is severely, severely negative. And if the cost of capitalizing becomes more and more, it could hurt a company like this that doesn't make much money at all. It was one of Steve's rules, not investing in companies that don't make money. The reason why isn't because they can't outperform. Sometimes they do. Sometimes the best performers in any given year are companies that do not make any money at all whatsoever. But it's about putting the dials in your favor. And generally speaking, companies like this that are built upon massive user engagement growth, which you're getting right now, which could certainly fall off. Companies that are built upon foundations that make it easy for competition to enter tend to, in the long term, not do as well. Doesn't mean that they're not going to be up another 100% this year. But investing is about returns and about risk. And generally speaking, in buying a company that issues a bunch of shares all the time and doesn't make any money, not a good idea. Thanks for the call. Now on Fridays, we generally make time to fit in a quick rundown of key benchmark numbers. So let me hit you with that list right now. 2-year treasury yield is at 3.983% today. Last week, it was 3.878. 42 weeks ago, it was 3.882. And 80 weeks back, it was 5.05. The 10-year was at 4.441% today. Last week, it was 4.37. 40 weeks ago, it was 3.92. 80 weeks back, it was 4.63. And 174 weeks ago, it was 1.762. Gold, $3,187 per ounce today, a $150 decrease compared to last week. 79 weeks back, that was 1935. And 168 weeks ago, that was 1806. Silver was at $32.23 per ounce today, 56 cent decrease compared with last week. 66 weeks ago, that number was 2280, and 160 weeks back, the number was 2394. Oil was selling for $62.56 per barrel, 1.62% increase compared to last week. 34 weeks ago, that was $67.79. 76 weeks back, so that was $74.30, and 176 weeks ago, that was $66.62. National average for a gallon of regular gasoline is $3.19, a 5 cent increase compared to last week. 102 weeks ago, it was $3.56. 150 weeks back, it was $4.25. And 170 weeks ago, it was $3.57. In California, it was averaging 4.92 per gallon, an 8-cent increase compared with last week. But less than 80 weeks ago, it was 5.32, and 156 weeks back, where it was 5.87. For comparison, in Kentucky, gas was averaging 2.89 per gallon today. That is $2.03 less than gas in California. Let's talk a little bit about debt. And specifically, let's talk about how U.S. companies have issued 40 billion euros worth of euro-denominated bonds, called reverse Yankee bonds, through May 9th, on track to surpass the 88 billion it issued in 2019. And it's across a wide array of firms: Alphabet, T-Mobile, Pfizer, issuing $6, $2, and $3 billion, respectively. Because of this, these reverse Yankee bonds, where U.S. companies go into Europe and issue euro-denominated bonds, now make up 30% of Europe's non-financial investment-grade bond market. So why would one do this? Well, European central bank rate cuts to 2.25% versus the Fed's 4.25 to 4.50, meaning that if you're a company that needs to finance its activities through debt, you're going to want to go to a place that has lower interest rates. And so that has widened the appeal of getting in the euro debt market. There's also a lot of tariff uncertainty. And that's pushed U.S. companies to front-load funding in case borrowing costs spike later, not just in the U.S., but internationally as well. There's also been a lot of currency volatility. And so with the euro-dollar rate having swung between $1 and $1.12 since late 2024, making these euro borrowing kind of a hedge. If you need to finance your activities in Europe, in euros, you don't have to worry about that FX exposure. And so the rise of the reverse Yankee bonds isn't just indicative of some of the issues that U.S. companies are facing, but more than anything, it's showing strength. The strength of global debt markets, meaning that U.S. companies can go elsewhere to finance investment outside of the U.S. But there are downsides, right? The downside is, well, from a structural perspective, 30% of the European debt market is now the United States, meaning that, or now U.S. companies, meaning that European markets become more intertwined, perhaps less of a good diversifier with respect to fixed income than they have been historically. And so keeping this in mind, realizing everything that's happening, realizing what is driving these trends, helps you understand how you should position not just your fixed income portfolio, but the ramifications that might have for equity markets more broadly. Let's keep things moving and roll in another listener question from 888-99-CHART.
Hi, this is David at Livermore, California. When you make reference to a certain percentage of your portfolio should be in this or that, do you include the home you live in as part of the portfolio? Do you include retirement accounts and taxable accounts? You know, what all is included in the entire portfolio when you're determining what percentage of that portfolio should be invested in a particular asset? Thank you.
That's a great question. And the reason why it's a good question is because I often talk about thinking about your investments holistically, right? Not just diversifying in your 401k and diversifying in your IRA and diversifying in your brokerage account, but understanding that your investments are the sum total of everything you own within your portfolio. And so really, it's just one portfolio with different tax treatments. And so with that in mind, you should look across boundaries and understand the correlations of everything together. And so the question brings in, what about your home? I would say for your primary residence, you can think of it as real estate exposure. But to me, a home, a primary home, is a utility. I want to get people away from thinking of property, their home, their primary residence, as an investment. and think of it as utility. Now, if you have investment property, certainly that's part of your real estate exposure. So in short, to make a long answer short, think of your investment portfolio as just that, the assets that you own for investment purposes. It includes your 401k, it includes your IRA, it includes your investment property, your brokerage accounts, everything you use, your CDs, everything. But personally, and again, this is just a personal choice, I think given that your primary home is primarily a utility, I wouldn't necessarily include that as real estate exposure for your investment portfolio. Great question. Thanks for the call. Let's keep things moving and roll in another listener question from 888. No, just kidding. I lied to you all. Let's do a YouTube question. This one said, hey, Justin and Luke, what do you guys think about UNH? It has come down significantly lately and appears oversold. Hey, Ghost, what do you think of UNH? She's yelling. She doesn't like it. So UNH is United Healthcare. And United Healthcare is obviously a healthcare company. And it's been in a little bit of turmoil recently. How much turmoil? Well, it's down 44%. In the past 3 months, year to date, it's down 42.9%. It is one of the nation's largest, one of the world's largest insurance companies. And they have recently had some issues. Their CEO departed. And even before their CEO's departure, their stock was pretty much in free fall. And then on the back of all of that, there was a story that popped up. That aside from the financial outlook suspension, which is never really a good thing, especially for a company that probably doesn't have to deal too much with the ramifications of tariffs, right? They suspended their 2025 outlook. The reason why they said it was because higher medical costs, particularly within Medicare Advantage, which is such a large portion of their business and really a lot of health insurance businesses, after the leadership change, it was announced that there was a criminal investigation by the U.S. Department of Justice into Medicare fraud. Specifically, that Medicare Advantage unit engaged in billing fraud. And so after that was announced, dropped off another 15% the next day. And so it's down from a recent high at about $600 to about $291. And so given this, is it a good investment? Well, certainly, we're in a price discovery phase. Anytime you're down 50%, essentially, we're trying to find what is reasonably how this company should be valued. It's up 6.4% today, after, again, being down 44% in the past 3 months. The other issue is, well, what are the potential ramifications of being found guilty of Medicare fraud? They could potentially not be able to participate in the Medicare market for 5 years. And because it's such a big percentage of their business, how much is the company worth then? Is that going to happen? I don't know. But the risks to the downside are enormous now. And so if you're looking to invest in UNH, I would certainly wait. I would wait for volatility to tamp it down a little bit. I would wait for the market to price in the real risk that a big, big portion of their business could go out the window. That is United Healthcare Group, ticker UNH. All right, let's get a fresh caller question from Denmark.
Hello, InvestTalk. Greetings from Denmark once again. I have a question about a European stock, hard to pronounce, but the ticker symbol is AHOG. So the name of the company is something like Ahold Delhaize out of the Netherlands or Holland. And it's a European dividend aristocrat. I'm considering picking this up sometime soon when there is an opportunity again, unless you think that this has some kind of side to it that I am not aware of. It should be a good, solid company with dividend growth. I'd like to hear your opinion. Thank you very much. All right.
I am not even going to begin to butcher this name, as the caller did an excellent job pronouncing it, but the ticker is AHOG. It is a leading international food retail company headquartered in Netherlands. They have a pretty diverse portfolio, it looks like, of supermarket brands across the United States and Europe. Ones that I recognize are Stop and Shop and Giant Food out of the United States. They had some pretty strong quarterly performance in Q1 of 2025. Pretty robust. Revenue reaching $23.28 billion, surpassing estimates, as well as net income for the quarter, about $380 million above estimates as well. Looks like they've done some strategic acquisitions recently, and it's a fairly large company. Fairly small company, about $893 million market cap here. And the debt levels look pretty modest to me. Now, from a sales perspective, they have done a lot in terms of the past couple years and growing from out of the pandemic. At the same time, their margins are pretty much where you'd expect margins to be from a grocer. Now, you mentioned they're a dividend aristocrat. About 4.4 to 3.2 is the range of dividends from there. You know, generally, it's difficult for companies that are often ones that I don't hear about too frequently that are, oh, I'm sorry, this is a $33 billion company. I was looking at the wrong line. Very large supermarket chain. Very little debt is what it looks like. Revenue growth looks pretty solid. Margins look solid and sustainable. Return on equity, pretty great, 11.7%. And the dividend's been pretty stable over time. So although I don't have much experience with this company, from a quick look, looks pretty decent to me, but do your own research. That is ticker AHOG, and we'll have more questions when we come back.
InvestTalk. Tell your friends they can listen live, download the free podcast, or watch InvestTalk on our YouTube channel.
This is Bob from Ohio. I'm calling about stock ticker GPK, Graphic Package Holding. I've been averaging into this for the past year, and I'm currently down about 10% on my total position, but it still seems like a solid company. So I would love to hear on your future analysis. Thanks again.
Let's take a look at ticker GPK, which is the Graphic Packaging Holding Company. It's a provider of sustainable paper-based packaging solutions. They serve a bunch of global brands and operate in 100 facilities employing more than 23,000 people. Now, it's a $7 billion company, so in the mid-cap range. It's got quite a bit of debt, though. $5.456 billion in debt. And its cash flow since 2023 has been headed in the wrong direction. It has a dividend, about 1.89% is its dividend yield, which is where it's been over the past 5 years, it looks like. And in terms of where it's trading, it's about the average of where it's been over the past 5 years. 10.4 times forward-looking earnings, 2.2 times book value, price to book value, about 10.7 times price to cash flow. Now, its revenue was kind of all over the place. It grew pretty expansively into 2022, and then it fell off a little bit, and it tapered off, and it continues to fall. Its margins at the same time have grown, though. So you are seeing increasing net margin, even with falling revenue. You know, overall, I think that generally, it's down, right? It's down 13.29% year-to-date, down 16% over the past 52 weeks. The reason being, well, you can see it by clicking here, maybe. Nope, doesn't show you the previous earnings, but they missed earnings. They missed revenue. They missed bottom line earnings. Overall, not really much to be excited about from my perspective. Yes, margins are expanding, but sales growth is falling. You're missing consensus estimates. There's a reason why it's trading at about the average of the past 5 years. So I just think there are better opportunities out there. That is Graphic Packaging Holding Company, ticker GPK. Now, before we get to my final talking point, I wanted to tell you about the new InvestTalk store. I invite you to make it your destination for exclusive InvestTalk merchandise, all created for savvy investors. Shop now to discover apparel and accessories that celebrate your financial journey. Visit InvestTalkStore.com over the weekend to shop the launch. Before we head off into the weekend, I wanted to briefly talk about what this rally really means, right? The market sharply rallied when tariffs on Chinese goods went from 145% to about 30%. Now, consumer sentiment is not great. Investor sentiment is not great, albeit that was before the most recent rally. But it's important to put things in context. U.S. dominance in gold portfolios is under a bit of scrutiny. Foreign holders, investors, hold about 50% of global savings in U.S. assets. But in the wake of tariffs, capital flows started to go elsewhere. In April, about 8.2 trillion or $57 billion, so 8.2 trillion yen or $57 billion, flowed into the Japanese stock market. The amount of treasuries that foreign investors are holding is also waning as well, down from 47% in 2012 to about 36% this year. At the same time, stocks are still pretty expensive. They're trading at 27 times forward earnings as of February. Albeit a little bit lower now, but maybe perhaps even higher given the realities of what is likely to come. The realities of what could potentially come. JP Morgan said, and I agree with this, that earnings forecasts aren't really taking into consideration a mid-case or worst-case scenario. They're taking into consideration a lot of trade alleviation, a lot of trade pressure alleviation. We're also seeing that the Mag 7 are doing well, large cap names are doing well, but the breadth that you'd expect to see in healthy markets isn't really keeping up pace with small and mid-cap companies drastically underperforming their large cap peers. And so my point is, although I'm always long-term bullish, when markets rally, you have to look underneath the hood and see what's going on. The U.S. has actually, surprise, surprise, underperformed the global market since April, even with the recovery. And so keep in mind, it's more than just the top line. Dig in, truly understand what is happening. I'm Luke Guerrero, and this completes another InvestTalk program. We thank you for listening and encourage you to tell your friends and family members about our free podcast downloads. Get yours anytime at iTunes, Google Play, and Spotify, and please be sure to leave us a rate and review on iTunes. Now, if today's show made you think about your own financial picture, your investments, your taxes, your retirements, whether it's all really working together, let's talk. At KPP, we offer no-cost portfolio reviews to help bring clarity and confidence. If this sounds interesting, go to investtalk.com and click on Portfolio Review. Independent thinking, shared success. This is InvestTalk. Enjoy your weekend.
InvestTalk is a trademark of KPP Financial. Because of the nature of the interactive dialogue inherent in the format of this program, it's important for the listener to understand that not all comments made will apply to them. Specifically, nothing said shall be taken to be investment advice, or shall statements on this program be considered an offer to buy or sell security. Because such advice is rendered solely on an individual basis and at times will require that the investor review a prospectus before investing. InvestTalk is a copyrighted program of Klein, Pavlis, and Peasley Financial, a registered investment advisor firm which retains all rights. For more information regarding KPP's investment advisors, call 1-800-557-5461. Thank you for listening, and your comments and questions are welcome on our 24-hour listener line at 888-99-CHART.